Welcome to The Drive. Over the next 2 hours, we'll break down everything that's happening in the sports world, locally and nationally. Got an opinion? Hit us up at 843-652-3776. The Drive is socially networked. Get us on Twitter at 1003TheTeam or on Facebook at facebook.com/1003TheTeam. Now buckle up, take the car out of park, and let's go to the Sports Radio 100.3 The Team studio in Murrells Inlet, South Carolina, with your boys, Pat Payone and Wally B.
No Wally B here today, but Pat Payone here today with you for the next 2 hours, and I'm joined by our buddy Rusty, who's running the board and making sure everything goes smoothly today. Really appreciate him coming in and filling in for Wally as Wally takes a couple of days off. But we got a great show for you planned today, and we got to start with some of the NBA news that came out last night. What a downright terrible situation for Andrew Bogut. I mean, this is the first game in a Cleveland Cavaliers jersey, and less than a minute into his career in Cleveland, he goes down with a fractured left tibia. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, the injury occurred when Bogut was closing out Miami forward Okara White, and his left leg collided with White's left knee with 11:38 remaining in the second quarter. Bogut had just played 58 seconds of this game. And Larry Drew, the assistant coach for Cavaliers, says it best. When you bring a guy in, you don't expect that type thing happening in a minute after he checks into the game. You never expect that to happen a minute checking into the game. But you never expect that to happen when you sign a free agent that in their first game, they're going to go down with an injury. And we had talked about how big of a deal it was, them signing Andrew Bogut and Deron Williams, and how both of those guys could really help them in their push to repeat as NBA champions, and how really it could help them going up against the Warriors if they were to meet the Warriors in the NBA Finals. It's interesting. It's very interesting because he was going to be a key piece. He brought a little bit of the power along with Draymond Green to this lineup, and he could have been a viable share of the ball because he's a very good passing center, and he's also a very good scoring center as well, defensively as well. He's a jack of all trades, and he was going to fill in and be a key piece to them making their postseason run and back to the NBA Finals to try and beat the Golden State Warriors more than likely in the NBA Finals. Well, now they got to do it without him. Hey, but he made some cool money just to play 58 minutes. That's incredible. Also in the news in the NFL, you know, I'm a huge huge proponent of trade talks and trade rumors, and the rumors have been swirling around Saints playmaker Brandon Cooks, the wide receiver, about the Eagles and Titans considering, you know, trading for him, and also the Patriots reportedly were in the mix as well. But recently, you know, the New Orleans had nixed a deal that included New England's late first-round pick. But we've come full circle here. Now it is looking like the Titans are the front runner to trade for wide receiver Brandon Cooks. And according to Chris Mortensen of ESPN, you know, discussions with the Titans have included two scenarios: Tennessee sending its number 18 overall pick to New Orleans for Brandon Cooks, or Tennessee sending its number 5 overall pick, which was acquired from my LA Rams. You're welcome, Titans fans. But they would send the number 5 pick to the New Orleans Saints in exchange for the number 11 pick and Brandon Cooks. Both of those scenarios work out great, I think, for both teams. And if I'm the Saints, I'm jumping all over the number 5 pick and trading away Brandon Cooks and the number 11 pick, because right now, and Sean Payton said it yesterday in an interview, they need defensive help. They need defensive help bad. We know what the Saints team is about. They can put up points on the board. They can't defend the wind.
Not at all.
No, they're terrible. Not at all. They're terrible on defense. There's Rusty, by the way. Rusty was trying to figure out how to get his headphones working. He wasn't hearing the show. That could be an issue when you're producing the show. But now he's listening, so we're good. We know what the Saints. I mean, this team is led by their offense. They need to get better on defense. And making a trade, trading away Brandon Cooks is not going to hamper them offensively because they have good young wide receivers still on the roster. But for the Tennessee Titans, getting rid of their number 5 overall pick and then having the number 11 overall pick and the number 18 overall pick and Brandon Cooks, that's a trade you can't pass up.
Win-win.
It is.
Most definitely.
So looking at Brandon Cooks' last 3 seasons, because he's only been in the NFL for 3 seasons, last year, 78 receptions for 1,173 yards and 8 touchdowns. The season before that, 84 receptions for 1,138 yards and 9 touchdowns. You look at the Titans' receiving core of last year, when your tight end and running back are two of the top 3 receiving threats, there's an issue there.
Most.
And yeah, Rishard Matthews, you know, 945 yards and 9 touchdowns, he's a good piece. He's not a number 1 wide receiver, and Brandon Cooks is a number 1 wide receiver. You add him into this lineup, and you're instantly vying for the AFC South with the Texans.
That's right.
I love this trade. I love this trade. And even with that trade, I still think you can make some splashes in the draft if you're the Tennessee Titans. There are some drafts out there that if they were to stay at their pick, have them reaching right now for John Ross or Corey Davis, the wide receivers in this draft, the two of the top 3 wide receivers in this draft with their first pick, the number 5 overall pick, and then taking O.J. Howard to back up Delanie Walker with the 18th overall pick. That's just studs on offense right there. And that does give Marcus Mariota some help. But they're also, you know, their defensive backfield is a little suspect right now. So I really believe drafting a safety and a DB in this first round could really help them out, especially if they get Brandon Cooks in this deal.
This makes perfect sense.
Doesn't it?
Why wouldn't you do it?
Why wouldn't you? And I think the thing that's hampering it right now is the Saints, you know, just kind of being a little trigger shy right now.
Right.
You know, do you want to get rid of your number 1 wide receiver, even though you have Will Thomas, who's a great rookie wide receiver, and you have the other guy's name I can't even remember, but he has been a special talent last year for them. I think you can afford getting rid of them and getting rid of Brandon Cooks and maybe your number 11 overall pick for the number 5 overall pick. And you get one of these special defensive players in this entire NFL draft.
Well, and this draft has some of the best defensive players we've ever seen.
You're right.
I mean, it's crazy.
Now, will they get one of the premier edge rushers? No. Do they have a chance at one of the premier safeties or cornerbacks or even linebackers? Yes.
Well, yeah.
And so that instantly can make a change to your defensive lineup. I love it. I think they pull the trigger on this trade, get Brandon Cooks. It instantly makes them a viable contender in the AFC South along with the Houston Texans. I'm not counting out the Indianapolis Colts, too, but they have a lot of holes that they need to fill, and you know, 5 of them being the entire offensive line, because that is a garbage unit. Right now on the Twitter, we put out there, do you think the Titans should trade for Saints wide receiver Brandon Cooks? 54% say no, 46% say yes. I'm wondering why people are saying no. I honestly believe adding Brandon Cooks makes you a viable contender in the AFC South. I really do. All right. Well, as we do every day, we don't have our celebrity birthdays because Wally's not here. And, oh well, we'll just get to the great sports birthdays that we have today. And this being March 7th, got to start off with one of the great NFL names in NFL history. Born on this day, 1950, Franco Harris, the Immaculate Reception himself, NFL running back for the Steelers, a 9-time Pro Bowl running back, 4-time Super Bowl champion, and he retired with over 12,000 career rushing yards and over 100 touchdowns in his career. Happy birthday to Franco Harris. Also born on this day, 1959, Mike Nolan, the former NFL head coach of the 49ers, who really did not have a good career.
No.
Hey, didn't really write down too much of him, so that's all I got to say. Also born on this day, 1960, Joe Carter, the MLB outfielder for the Blue Jays, best known for that walk-off home run to win the 1993 World Series for the Blue Jays.
I still remember that.
Oh, yeah.
That was awesome.
It was incredible. Also born this day, 1968, Jeff Kent, MLB second baseman who played predominantly for the Giants and the Dodgers in his career. He's a 5-time All-Star who retired in 2008 with 377 lifetime home runs. Probably goes down as one of the top 5, if not top 10, second baseman of all time, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
And then I have my sports birthday profile. And today, you know, we already went through one of the great running backs in Steeler history. So why not throw in one of the great wide receivers in Steeler history? It is 1952, born this day, Lynn Swann, currently the athletic director for the University of Southern California and former American football player, broadcaster, and politician, which I didn't even know this. I kind of didn't recognize when I saw Lynn Swann that he was the chairman of the President's Council on Fitness, Sports, and Nutrition from 2002-2005. Did you know that?
I had no clue.
And you're a big political pundit.
I had no clue.
They don't get the recognition. He was also the Republican nominee for the governorship of Pennsylvania. Didn't know that as well. But during his football career, he was a wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers in the NFL. He played college football, as I mentioned, at USC, was a consensus All-American, was drafted by the Steelers in the first round of the 1974 NFL Draft, and he was selected with the 21st overall pick in that draft. Now, the Steelers draft class of 74 is considered one of the best in NFL history and included four eventual Hall of Famers: Lynn Swann, John Stallworth, Mike Webster, and Jack Lambert.
Wow.
That's incredible. I can't even think of an NFL draft for a single team that has had that many great players at their positions.
You'll never see that
again.
No,
never.
Never.
Never. But with the Steelers, Swann won four Super Bowls, was selected to three Pro Bowls, and in Super Bowl X, he recorded four catches for a Super Bowl record, 161 yards and a touchdown in a game to assist the Steelers to the 21-17 win, and also becoming the first wide receiver in history to earn the Super Bowl MVP honors. He was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2001. He finished his career with 336 receptions for 5,462 receiving yards and 51 touchdowns. Now, if he played today, he would be a stud.
He would be a stud.
Because with all of the passing that we have in the NFL, I mean, think about that. How many years did I say he played in the NFL? I didn't even write that down. It was a long time. But 336 receptions and just 5,500 yards?
That's unreal.
That's ridiculous. He'd have probably like double, if maybe not even triple that. Unbelievable. But Lynn Swann, still one of the great wide receivers in NFL history. Today's day in history, starting off in 1979 on this day, March 7th, two gentlemen were selected into the Baseball Hall of Fame, them being Warren Giles and Hack Wilson. What a name, Hack Wilson, for a baseball player. Giles, an American professional baseball executive, spent 33 years in the high-level posts in Major League Baseball as a club president and general manager of the Cincinnati Reds from 1937 to 1951, and the president of the National League from 51 to 69, and again was elected in the National Baseball Hall of Fame. Hack Wilson, he was an American Major League Baseball player who played 12 seasons for the New York Giants, Chicago Cubs, Brooklyn Dodgers, and Philadelphia Phillies. Now, despite his small stature, he was one of the most accomplished power hitters in the game during the late 1920s and early 1930s. In his 1930 season with the Cubs, it was widely considered one of the most memorable individual single-season hitting performances in baseball history. He had 56 home runs, the National League record for 68 years, and 191 RBIs in that season, which was a mark yet to be surpassed.
Oh, yeah, and that was before PED.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Back then, they were just hammered all the time on the baseball diamond. But while Wilson's combativeness and excessive alcohol consumption, made him one of the most colorful sports personalities of the era, his drinking and fighting undoubtedly contributed to the premature end to his athletic career and ultimately his premature demise. But again, on this day, Hack Wilson inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1979. Also on this day, March 7th, 1996, Magic Johnson is the second NBA player to reach 10,000 career assists. So I went to the all-time career assist board, and there's actually two current players on this in the top 10. Chris Paul is number 10 right now with 8,083 assists in his career. And Andre Miller, you would think that Andre Miller has more assists than Chris Paul. That's incredible. But Andre Miller is ninth right now with 8,524 assists. Now, looking at Magic Johnson, fifth all-time, he ended his career with 10,141 assists. Mark Jackson is fourth with 10,334 assists. Steve Nash, oof. How many years did he just have ridiculous assist numbers? Steve Nash is third all-time with 10,335. Jason Kidd is second with 12,091. Who's number one? John Stockton. Of course it's John Stockton of the Utah Jazz. John Stockton had 15,806 assists in his career. Almost 3,000, actually more than 3,000 assists than the second player on this list. That's incredible. You know who else also in the top 15? LeBron James. LeBron James is in the top 15. I thought that was pretty interesting as well. But on this day, Magic Johnson is the second player to ever reach 10,000 career assists. Also on this day, March 7th, and some fans will cry, some fans will cheer, some fans will just be, you know, happy that they got to see him play. Peyton Manning announced his retirement from the NFL. He played 18 seasons in the NFL, primarily with the Indianapolis Colts, and then finishing off his career with the Denver Broncos. Considered one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, he spent 14 seasons with the Colts and was a member of the Denver Broncos his last four seasons. We all know played for Rocky Top, the University of Tennessee, leading the Tennessee Volunteers to the 97 SEC Championship in his senior season. And he is the second son of former NFL quarterback Archie Manning and older brother of New York Giants quarterback Eli Manning, who I like to call mouth breather. Manning was selected by the Colts as the first overall pick in the 1998 NFL draft, and from 1998 to 2010, he improved the fortunes of the struggling Colts franchise and helped them transform into a playoff contender year in and year out. And he led the team to 8 division championships, 2 AFC championships, and 1 Super Bowl title, the franchise's first in over 3 decades, as well as the first since relocating from Baltimore to Indianapolis. After undergoing neck surgery that forced him to miss the entire 2011 season, Manning was released by the Colts and signed by the Denver Broncos, and he was a starting quarterback from 2012 to 2015, and he contributed to the Broncos reaching the top of their division each year and a playing career concluding with a victory in Super Bowl 50. He holds so many records that we could probably make an entire show about Peyton Manning's NFL records, but that's including passing yards, touchdown passes, MVP awards, Pro Bowl appearances, and 4,000-yard passing seasons. He is also a 2-time Super Bowl winner and an MVP of Super Bowl 41. 41. Manning is also the only quarterback to start Super Bowl for 2 different franchises more than once each, and the only starting quarterback to win a Super Bowl with 2 different franchises. He's also the only quarterback in NFL history to make the Super Bowl 4 times with 4 different head coaches.
That's wild.
Yeah. Tony Dungy, Jim Caldwell, John Fox, Gary Kubiak. So pretty interesting there. As I mentioned, 2-time Super Bowl winner, Super Bowl 41 MVP, 14-time Pro Bowl selections, 7-time first-team All-Pro member, 5-time NFL MVP, 2-time NFL Offensive Player of the Year, NFL Comeback Player of the Year in 2012, 3-time NFL Passing Leader, 4-time NFL Passing Touchdown Leader, and we went through all of those NFL records, including three these are all popping out now. 55 passing touchdowns in a single season, that's an NFL record. 7 passing touchdowns in a game is tied for an NFL record. And his 186 wins for a career is also tied, not any longer. Tom Brady now holds that record, so thank you for getting that wrong where I looked this up. But incredible career for Peyton Manning, one of the greats, probably, in my opinion, a top 5 quarterback of all time. Don't know if he's up in there in the top 3 with the likes of Tom Brady, Joe Montana, and who would be number 3?
Bart Starr.
Bart Starr. maybe. Possibly. That'd be a good conversation for another day.
Yeah.
But let's tell the folks what they're hearing on today's show, Rusty. We already talked about Andrew Bogut, who signed the deal with the Cleveland Cavaliers, gets in his first game, then 58 seconds in, snaps his tibula. He's done. Thanks for playing.
That was sad.
Yeah, it's really sad. We also talked about the possible trade with the Titans and the Saints sending wide receiver Brandon Cooks to Tennessee. I think that would be a great trade for both teams. We're going to talk about NFL Combine winners and losers as the NFL Combine wrapped up yesterday. We'll also talk about Panthers draft options. What are the biggest needs the Panthers need to fill in this NFL draft? And really, with those needs, where does that correlate with the talent that's in this NFL draft? T.O.'s back in the news and with some Hall of Fame news, and we'll talk about that. He's just a ridiculous human being. I love talking about T.O. We can make an entire show talking about T.O. again.
He can't stay out of the news.
Really. No more Wally B's World of Sports as he's off today, so we're going to talk about some scores that could impact the NCAA tournament. We will also preview the ACC tournament and the SEC tournament. So we'll talk about those. We'll give predictions on that, on who we believe will win those tournaments. And then final word on what to watch will wrap up today's show. Going through the polls on Twitter for you, at 100 through the team is where you can find us on Twitter. My Twitter handle, Producer Pat. For Twitter, first poll, do you think the Titans should trade for Saints wide receiver Brandon Cooks, yes or no? And 50% say yes, 50% say no right now. Keep going on Twitter and voting for that one. What are the biggest needs for the Panthers that they need to fill in the NFL draft? Who wins the ACC Men's Basketball Conference Tournament? Is it North Carolina? Is it Florida State? Is it Notre Dame? Or is it other? And if you vote for other, definitely tell us who. Because I think there is possibilities of a couple other teams vying for the ACC Conference Tournament Championship as well. Could it be Duke or Louisville? Possibly. Who wins the SEC Men's Basketball Conference Tournament? I think there's four teams, really, you could put into this one. Maybe even five, actually. Kentucky, Florida, and Arkansas, and other are your options. If you do vote for other, tell us who. I'm sure that's going to anger some South Carolina Gamecocks fans that I didn't throw them in there, but the way I did it, I took the top three seeds, put them in the poll, and if you want to see one of those other teams outside of the top three seeds, go ahead and vote for other and tell me who you're thinking of. But Vanderbilt could also be a sneaky team that could win this SEC championship as well. All right, Rusty, let's get to the first commercial break, and when we come back, NFL Combine winners and losers on the drive.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. Pat Payone and Rusty hanging out with you. As I mentioned earlier, Wally's off today and tomorrow and Thursday. So we'll have Rusty in the building, hanging out, helping me out with the show. And the NFL Combine wrapped up yesterday with all of the drills and these guys running around in their skibbies for 4 days. So let's talk about the winners and losers. And starting off, Clemson quarterback Deshaun Watson is a big winner. I mean, the feeling coming into this combine week was probably that there wasn't much Watson could do for himself that you didn't see in the 3.5 years of starting two national title games, one championship title, and being a Heisman finalist didn't already tell you. But he tested well. He interviewed with teams very well, even perhaps better than people expected. And when teams asked other players about the best or toughest player they faced, Deshaun Watson was a frequent response by most players.
Wow.
Now, what this has done for him is he's almost certainly a first-round pick now. As some people had questioned whether he was going to be a first-round pick. Now the question comes, which team's going to like him the most and go ahead and take him in the draft? That's the biggest question.
Cleveland.
Please no. I don't wish that upon anybody.
Neither do I.
But Deshaun Watson, definitely a big winner. Also a big winner, Stanford running back slash wide receiver slash whatever you want to put him out there as, Christian McCaffrey. Now, he did have a bad bench press drill. He had 10 bench reps at 225, which is the second lowest among running backs, bottom 15% of among the wide receivers. He had a good but not great 40-yard dash time at 4.48. But his exceptional numbers were in some of the other drills. Vertical jump, he was tied for fifth among all running backs and wide receivers with 37.5 inches. His three-cone drill was tied for first at wide receiver and running back positions. And his 60-yard shuttle was second in wide receivers or running backs. That more than enough made up for the lack of bench press that he has. I mean, look at some of these running backs that are small. They're not going to do the bench press pretty in the NFL very well. So I'm not really worried about that. And he's not expected to come in and block some of the outside pass rushers in the NFL.
Right.
He's expected to be a playmaker. And so it's really going to come to a question, which team thinks he's a valuable asset at either the running back, receiver, or returner position? Also a big winner, Ohio State running back, wide receiver, another guy like that, Curtis Samuel. You know, he had a blazing 40-yard dash at 4.31, and that was a pleasant surprise for a player who really did not make a ton of long plays in college. But he showed some consistent playmaking ability in those games for Ohio State. His other numbers were solid, too, and it is expected that his stock definitely rose from what he was able to do in the NFL Combine. Another big winner is going to be Alabama offensive lineman Cam Robinson. You know, some of his teammates stumbled. Some of his Alabama teammates stumbled in Indianapolis. Robinson put his best foot forward. And really, it came down to his interviews. There was a lot of character questions about this guy, whether it was about guns or drugs or what have you. And supposedly he answered those questions like a man and did a very good job. His testing numbers were a little underwhelming. He didn't bench, actually. But his on-the-field work was strong, looking great in some of the pass set and run blocking drills. And it really, as I mentioned, the interview process appears to have really halted some of those big concerns they have, Adam. He's definitely a first-rounder for sure and likely the first tackle off the board. Finally, Myles Garrett. I mean, he's the top pick in this NFL draft. He did nothing to change that position at the combine. If anything, he solidified and forced the Cleveland Browns to explore all other angles to land a quarterback than with the number one overall selection. This pick has to be number one, Myles Garrett. They need to make him the number one overall pick, and that was solidified. Some losers to talk about real quick. DeShone Kizer, the Notre Dame quarterback. He came into the week with a lot of teams intrigued with his size, with his athleticism, and his strength of an arm. But he had some so-so workouts. He had sloppy footwork during some of the on-field throwing portion. And some of the interviews that he had were said to have really failed to impress a lot of the team executives. Now, nothing really hurts your stock that much. He still will more than likely be a first-round pick. But with other quarterbacks stepping up, like DeShone Watson, like Mitch Trubisky, like Patrick Mahomes, this was probably a missed opportunity for DeShone Kizer to solidify him as one of the top three quarterbacks. Now we'll have to wait to his pro day for him to clean up his footwork and try and get back some of that buzz that was really around him at the NFL draft. Florida State running back Dalvin Cook, I am so high on him, and I will say it again. If I'm an NFL executive and I'm looking at drafting a running back, and I'm thinking between Leonard Fournette and Dalvin Cook, I'm sorry, folks. I'm taking Dalvin Cook.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's the more explosive athlete. I think he fits into so many different systems. And he can catch the ball out of the backfield, which Leonard Fournette cannot. He has pan hands. But, you know, Cook is an exceptional college football player. And if you watch the tape of his games at Florida State, you don't have any questions about that. What was really concerning was that it was almost a confusing and lackluster workout for him. I mean, some believe that he could have came into this NFL combine and really taken away the number one spot from Leonard Fournette. But it really was underwhelming to see what he was able to do. Now, his landing spot in the NFL draft is very in flux right now. He's still a first-round pick, but he may have fallen out of the top 15 picks, as some believed at one point. I still think watching him play for Florida State and watching Leonard Fournette play for LSU, with all of the concerns with injuries for Leonard Fournette, his inability to catch the ball out of the backfield, and whether you want to equate that to the quarterbacks at LSU, which couldn't throw the ball more than 5 yards the entire time he was there, or whether you want to equate that to him not being able to close his hands on a ball, I'll take Dalvin Cook. I'll take the risk with Dalvin Cook. Also, some losers. Virginia Tech wide receiver Isaiah Ford supposedly is a speed wide receiver. That is the designation for Isaiah Ford, speed wide receiver. So why did he run a 4.6 140?
He's not speedy.
He's not speedy. And also, there was one evaluator that at the weigh-in that said skinny legs. That's all he said. It was skinny legs. And that's something that, you know, as a wide receiver, you're going to take some shots in the NFL to your legs. And if you can't handle that, and then all you can do is run a straight line route, not many teams are going to be looking for that.
Not at all.
And especially with a 4.6 140, that's not very impressive. Probably the biggest loser of the entire NFL combine's got to be Alabama linebacker Reuben Foster. I talked about this yesterday as my ugly. No matter how you spin it, being sent home from the NFL combine following a run-in with a medical employee does not bear well for you.
No.
If anything, that raises so many more character issues.
Oh, yeah.
As if you didn't have some already.
And it turns teams off.
Oh, yeah.
Who wants that drama?
Now, he still will be a first-round pick, but how far is he going to drop? We were talking about him being a top-10 pick.
Not anymore.
I mean, if you're in a need for a middle linebacker, you might be able to look past this and hope that you have the system and the support system in your entire franchise to reel this guy in and get the best out of his physical ability and hope that he doesn't have a mental breakdown on or off the field. I mean, he missed a chance to interview with all of the teams in Indianapolis. That's a setback. He's also coming off shoulder surgery, so he wouldn't really he won't be able to work out at his pro day. The teams are starting to wonder about this guy. Not only does he is he athletic enough to be a three-down linebacker, but now you throw in the character concerns. The damage control has begun for Reuben Foster, and he's got to be the biggest loser of the entire NFL draft. There's other ones as well, and you could take it however you'd like it, winners or losers. It's all a matter of perspective, but that's my perspective. I think there are some big winners, including Deshaun Watson and Christian McCaffrey, and some big losers, including Deshaun Kizer. Oh, what a fall from grace, and Reuben Foster. Go on Twitter, let us know. All these polls coming up, one coming up after this segment. What are the biggest needs of the Panthers that they need to fill in the NFL draft? We'll get into that conversation after this break, but got to let you know. A great sponsor and a presenting sponsor of The Drive is HTC. HTC, this is Life Connect with it. And it doesn't matter if you're a power user or custom lightning fast downloads or someone who just needs to check your email, HTC high-speed internet has a plan and pricing perfect for you. HTC high-speed internet has installation and 24/7 tech support, all for free with no hidden equipment fees. And for more details, you can call HTC at 843-369-8982. HTC, this is Life. Connect with it. When we come back, some Panther draft talk on The Drive.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. 41 and a half minutes past the hour. Pat Payone and Rusty hanging out with you. And we just went over some of the winners and losers of the NFL Combine. And so after the Combine, we could start answering some of these questions revolving around the Panthers and their possible selections. Now, interestingly enough, the Panthers have four top 100 picks, including the number eight overall. So the Panthers are in an excellent position to get some high-value talent to really come in and start playing in the next couple seasons. So here's what we can learn, really, from the NFL Combine in relation to the Carolina Panthers. And again, go on Twitter at 100 through the team. Answer the question, what are the biggest needs for the Panthers that they need to fill in the NFL draft? Also, the phone line's wide open for you, 843-652-3776. We know we got some Panthers fans out there. Here's one of the things I learned. This might be the year to go ahead and draft a safety or a tight end for the Panthers. Now, these positions are thick with talent, top to bottom. I mean, going into this, I knew there were some special talents at tight end, but I did not know that they were going to perform at the combine so ridiculously. O.J. Howard, the standout tight end from Alabama, he ran a 4.5 40-yard dash. To put that in perspective, Panthers All-Pro tight end Greg Olsen, he also did a 4.5 40-yard dash during his own testing. That's incredible.
That is.
So if you could go ahead, I mean, I'm not saying, it's time to move on from Greg Olsen. I'm not saying that at all, folks. But we've seen them use two tight end packages a lot, not only in running, but in passing downs. And you can start planning for the future and lock up one of the best tight ends in this entire NFL draft. So that's a possibility. But this group is really deep. So even if you don't take him with the number eight overall, if you trade back and move on and get O.J. Howard, this is a very deep athletic field with the tight end position. 14 tight ends ran the 40. The average time was 4.65. For those 14. That was led by Evan Engram of Ole Miss, 4.42, who is a speed demon. Now, I was also blown away by some of the athleticism among the safeties. This is a group who's led by, a couple of different guys, Jamal Adams of LSU, and a name that's really popped off and on the tip of tongues among a lot of different people around the NFL is Obi Melifonwu. Yep, Obi Melifonwu
of UConn. Times.
Yeah, I can't do that. But Obi Melifonwu, I'm just going to call him Obi Mel. Yeah, instead of Obi-Wan, Obi Mel. He ran a 4.4. 40-yard dash, also posted an 11-foot-9-inch broad jump. Good by the way, 44-inch vertical. He is a freak. He is a freak athlete. Now, you can add him in there and help out Kurt Coleman, who's needed some help at safety. They have never found the counterpart to Kurt Coleman. And so, you know, maybe going the free agency route might be the safe route, but bringing in a rookie like Obi Mel, I'm going to call him that, or Jamal Adams with the number 8 overall pick, that would just be studly. And that's a serious secondary right there, at least the back half of the secondary. But there are also five safeties that ran their 40s in a 4-4 second range, including USC's Adoree Jackson and NC State's Josh Jones. So those are two guys that you should be keeping an eye on as well. You know, each and every year, and I'm sure I'll get the response on one of the biggest needs. I'm sure we'll get the response on the biggest need being offensive line help.
Yes.
Well, that is one of the most common things you'll hear from Carolina Panthers, is that the biggest need is to draft a tackle early. Well, I hate to tell you folks, outside of Cam Robinson, there's not really one that's worth an early pick. And Dave Gettleman, the GM, is adamant that he won't reach for one either. And I think that's important to say. I think instead you need to make some free agency moves to shore up that offensive line. Because I just don't know that if there's a strong enough guy who can come in right now and start for an NFL team outside of Cam Robinson. There are some projects. And if you're looking to get a fourth or fifth round offensive lineman, that's a project. You'll have some good options at that point. But that's not the thing that you can fill in the first round. Now, also the big question is what's going to happen with the running back position, and it really does depend on the draft. You know, Leonard Fournette, Dalvin Cook, in my opinion, and I'll say it again, are the top two running backs in this draft. Now, some believe that Dalvin Cook, with what he did at the combine, he is not worth the 8th overall pick. And some believe that Leonard Fournette, because of what he has showed at LSU, is not worth the 8th overall pick. Luckily for Carolina, they have so many options at the running back position. I mean, you could possibly wait and get Tennessee's Alvin Kamara later on, who had a pretty good combine himself. Wayne Gallman of Clemson could be around in the 3rd or 4th round. I think there's a lot of good running backs in this NFL draft. So I don't know if you're reaching, and it's not even a reach, I should say, but if there's a guy on your board that is higher than these two running backs, you have to take him. I don't care what the need is. You can fill in that void at running back with the Jonathan Stewart possibly not being there. I think you could fill it later on in the draft because there's a lot of good running backs. Kevin writes in, running back, offensive line, defensive end, maybe sprinkle in another big play wide receiver in there for the Panthers. Chad writes in something pretty interesting. Don't forget how bad they roasted the GOAT, Tom Brady, at the NFL Combine. The real game is played on the field. That is a good point. Good point. These are measurables. These are just drills that guys do over and over and over again. But still, They're drills that are there for a reason. They show kind of what you could display in an NFL game by itself. Now, there is also some recent speculation, and this kind of goes to Kevin's thing, is if there's a playmaker at the number 8 position at wide receiver, and John Ross has snuck up some boards because of his dashing 4.22 40-yard dash. Could he become a Panther? Don't do it. This guy, it can only run 2 routes, and that is down the field in a straight line,
yep,
and pretty much a slant route. He is not a good polished wide receiver, and that is not what you need to really pair with Kelvin Benjamin. If I'm the Panthers, and I actually had a conversation with a buddy yesterday about this. He sent me a text message, and I'll have to open it up right here. Here we go. He said, Panthers, draft Fournette in the first round. Cordrea Tankersley, the cornerback from Clemson, in the second round. Rounds 3 through 7 get O-line, edge rushers, and safety. And then you sign either DeSean Jackson or Alshon Jeffrey as a free agent, and you win the Super Bowl. I said, if I'm David Gettleman, I don't touch Alshon Jeffrey. He is the same, in my opinion, the same wide receiver as Kelvin Benjamin. But you could go out and get DeSean Jackson at a good price and pair him with Kelvin Benjamin, two totally different wide receivers. And we've seen what Ted Ginn Jr. has been able to do in this offense. DeSean Jackson is a much, much, much better wide receiver than Ted Ginn Jr. Ted Ginn Jr. can't catch a ball. How many times have we seen him over the last couple of years drop the ball on a route?
More than we care to
more than yet. We yeah, I was about to say more than we care to even think about. So I'm saying, you know, move on. Go ahead and try and see if you can get DeSean Jackson, although everything that we've heard out of Rumorville is that DeSean Jackson wants to either sign with the Cowboys, the Eagles, or the Patriots. Please no. Please no. I don't want to see any of those teams. Yeah, the Eagles, why not? Who cares? He'll just, you know, wither away in Philadelphia.
That's right.
But with Dallas, I don't want to see that. That makes them an instant Super Bowl favorite with the Patriots.
No, we don't want that.
No, don't want that.
Not at all.
I'm not a Cowboy hater by any means, but I like to hate on the Cowboys. Not a hater, though. But if I'm the Panthers, I think you first see what you have available with some of those top guys at safety and at running back. And that's where you go with the first round pick. And then I believe, as my buddy had texted me, said, adding Cordrea Tankersley for the cornerback from Clemson in the second round, he could be a good piece to add in there with those already young cornerbacks they have. Dino writes in, I'd like to see the Panthers draft Mike Williams from Clemson or a good defensive back. Mike Williams would be a good pick. I don't know if at number 8. If you want to move back a couple spots, I think that would be a better spot. And plus, you get some more, picks, possibly in the NFL draft. Then you can do that. But right now, if I'm sticking at number 8, I'm taking one of the running backs or one of the top safeties off the board.
That's right.
That's what you got to do.
Yeah, that would not be a number 8 pick.
Keep going on Twitter at 1003 the team. Let us know what you think the Panthers should do. What's the biggest need they need to fill in the NFL draft? When we come back from this next commercial break, Terrell Owens back in the news with the Hall of Fame talk. We'll be back on The Drive.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, the team.
Welcome back to The Drive. Just about 2 minutes left in the first hour on today's show, Tuesday, March 7th. And Terrell Owens just can't keep himself out of the news. He is a Hall of Fame talent, even if he's yet to be inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And we talked about it a couple weeks ago, or it was back in February, actually, where in early February it was announced that the 2017 class did not include Terrell Owens for the second straight year. And it's, you can't dispute that he's deserving of being in the Hall of Fame. But it's the fact that he's such an outspoken individual with the media, teammates, and coaches that has really kept him from being omitted, even though off-the-field behavior isn't supposed to be such a factor. So while he's waiting another year to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, New York Daily News writer Gary Myers heard from another Hall of Fame player who saw Terrell Owens in Los Angeles. Owens was carrying a shopping bag. In the bag, a custom-made gold jacket. Now, T.O. had told the Hall of Famer that his career stats were actually on the back of the jacket. So, he doesn't need Canton now. He doesn't need it at all. He's got his own gold jacket. But he should be in. 15 seasons, over 1,000 receptions, over almost 16,000 yards, 153 touchdowns. Come on. Gotta put him in. But it's this type of thing that makes him divide the selection committee, like he divided locker rooms. You got to just be quiet and let it happen. Be quiet, T.O. That's all I got to say.
Your sports leader from Little River to Loras, Conway to Carolina Forest. We are WSCA, Atlantic Beach, Myrtle Beach. Cumulus Broadcasting Sports Radio 100.3, the team. Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team, with your boys, Pat Payone and Wally B.
No Wally B today, just myself and Rusty running the board today for The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. Hour 2 of The Drive, and Hour 2 of The Drive is brought to you by Air Mechanical. Get a new high-efficient Amana system today. Air Mechanical, we're in your neighborhood. And whether you're listening on your radio at 100.3 FM, streaming it live on our website, teammyrtlebeach.com, or listening through the free app, the Sports Radio 100.3, the Team app, we welcome you to today's show. And this is hour number 2. If you missed hour number 1, let's go over it again for them, Rusty. We started off the show talking about Andrew Bogut, 58 seconds on the court in a Cleveland Cavaliers jersey, breaks his tibia.
That was just sad.
Done for the season. It's so sad.
And it was a freak accident.
Yeah.
I mean, it was completely freak accident.
Just made the wrong. It was the wrong type of contact at that that part of the leg, I guess. I'm seeing some funny tweets coming. I'll have to read them in a little bit. We also talked about the possibility of a Titans-Saints trade where the Saints would send wide receiver Brandon Cooks to the Titans. And I believe if this trade goes through and the Titans get the wide receiver Brandon Cooks, it makes them an instant contender for the AFC South, which they already were last year with the running game that they have. But adding a number one wide receiver like Brandon Cooks, look out. We also talked about some of the NFL Combine winners and losers. We talked about some of the Panthers draft options and what we believe they should do. As I mentioned earlier, I think you take either one of the top two running backs off the board or one of the top two safeties off the board, because that's really some key positions that could really you could fill with one of those. There's so many good players in this draft, really, though, that you, if you're not looking for one of those top two running backs, you could wait.
Right.
And so that's why I said if there is a guy that you're seeing on your board that just happens to fall into your lap, you got to take him. We also just wrapped up the first hour talking about Terrell Owens making his own gold Hall of Fame jacket. So he doesn't need to be in Canton now. But he should be. He is ridiculous. Like, the stats don't lie. I'm a big stat guy. The stats don't lie. T.O. should be in there. It's unfortunate because these writers and these guys who dictate who makes it to the Hall of Fame have just a grudge against T.O. because he was a divisive player. He didn't know when to shut up. And definitely was a problem in a lot of locker rooms, but that shouldn't matter.
It should have no bearing.
It should have no bearing. Anyway, it is the first segment of the 8 o'clock hour, so we usually do Wally B's World of Sports. Wally's not here, so we're going to keep talking about sports. And going to Twitter real quick, some funny things. Michael writes in about the Titans and Saints trade. Yes, they probably need some help in the kitchen. Brandon Cooks, that's a good one. Michael also writes in about what the Panthers' biggest need in the NFL draft is, a new public relations person. Wow. Michael also responds to Chad's tweet, which Chad was saying, don't forget how they roasted the GOAT Tom Brady at the NFL Combine. The real game is played on the field. Michael responds, you got that right. The Combine is a dirt road that leads to nowhere. Michael always writes in some good things. He usually writes in after the show is done, so I don't even have a chance to comment on them or respond to them or even put them out on the airwaves. But he has some good tweets usually, so I'm glad he got in during the show today. Well, we talked about the NFL and the NFL Combine in the first hour. Let's switch gears and talk about NCAA basketball. Selection Sunday is this Sunday?
I know.
That's crazy.
Just a couple days.
That is crazy. Now, the dirty secret relying around the NCAA tournament is that it always doesn't mean that the best team will win it all. Simply put, it's the hottest team in March and April that wins the NCAA tournament. Momentum, momentum, momentum. That is everything in the NCAA tournament. That's why a Cinderella, like a George Mason,
right,
like a VCU. Name some other Cinderellas that have happened.
A couple years ago, was it Butler?
Butler. I think they were a top four seed, okay, and they made it to the final.
Okay,
Davidson with Steph Curry. Yeah, I mean, there's always a Cinderella team that can make it into the Elite Eight or Final Four run, and that happens almost every year. All it takes is one or two or three wins to get things rolling, and from there, anything can happen. But if you dig deeper into the actual makings of the NCAA tournament, you'd realize that these hot teams usually have at least one, if not more, hot players going on some hot streaks as well. These are players who could take over games, score at will, and put the entire team, if needed, on their back throughout the entire March Madness. So with that being said, let's talk about some of the most dangerous scorers in NCAA basketball who we can look ahead to the 2017 NCAA tournament and see their names possibly leading their teams to some great wins in the NCAA tournament. I start off with the guard from Kentucky, Malik Monk. Freshman guard Malik Monk, former five-star recruit, will likely only be in the Kentucky uniform for another month or so.
Right.
Going to be in the NBA draft more than likely, maybe even a top pick. He has the scoring ability to single-handedly propel Kentucky to yet another NCAA tournament. And there's talent around him. They don't need him to be a one-man show, but he could be. He's averaging 21.7 points per game this season, which is good enough for 12th in all of college basketball. That's incredible. He's long. He's lanky. He's got incredible range. He has the ability to stop on a dime and put some silky smooth moves on a player and really hit a jump shot from just about anywhere on the court. Think about back when they played North Carolina and they were number 7 at that point in time in December. Who scored 47 points? Malik Monk.
That's right.
Now think about when they played Georgia in late January. Who scored 37 points on a pretty good defensive Georgia Bulldogs team? Malik Monk. This is why he's one of the top scorers in the entire nation, and Malik Monk really could lead the Kentucky Wildcats to an NCAA tournament. Chris Jenkins, the forward of Villanova, he's done it once.
That's right.
He could do it again. I mean, what really makes him so dangerous is that they have the experience of winning the NCAA tournament already.
That's they experience won- you oh, yeah. can't.
You can't replicate
unreal.
It.
Exactly.
I mean, we could talk about some of the best players in the nation, but the fact is the game was on the line each and every game. And
That's
yes,
right.
you play the regular season, but losing a game in the regular season doesn't necessarily mean, in the grand scheme of things, doesn't mean that much.
That's right.
You can come back and rebound from a loss in the regular season. I mean, often teams have two or three losses when they get to the NCAA tournament. But a loss in the NCAA tournament, it's one and done.
That's
You're
it.
Done.
You're out.
So having that expertise and that experience of getting to the national championship and winning it last year, especially with the last-second three-point shot that he had, the game winner over North Carolina.
That's right.
You got to believe Chris Jenkins is on this list. I mean, he is one of the most dangerous scorers. Sure, he's not even the top scorer on his own team this year. But after that buzzer beater last year, there's no shot that is too big for this guy to bury in this upcoming tournament. I also look at guard from Kansas, Frank Mason III. He's played in some absolutely huge games in his four seasons at Kansas with the Jayhawks. He has the rare combination of ability and experience that makes him very dangerous heading into this NCAA tournament. He's led the Kansas Jayhawks in scoring this season, putting up 20.2 points per game, which makes him a top 30 scorer in the nation. But really, his explosiveness for Kansas is really the thing that is incredible. He can shoot from long range, and he's actually shooting over 50% from behind the three-point line this year. But he can also get his own shot off the dribble. He is comfortable at the point guard position, pushing the tempo, running the floor, and scoring in the transition game. He's also a scary facilitator. He's averaging almost 5 assists per game and can easily not only take over an NCAA tournament game, but help somebody else take over an NCAA right. tournament game. He's put up 30 points against then number 11 Indiana, number 30 points against UMKC. Don't even know who that is. Oh, that's Missouri, Kansas City.
Yep.
28 points against Oklahoma and 32 points against Iowa State. He's had some big games this year. And if Kansas is going to win the national title, you better believe it. It's going to be on the back of Frank Mason III. Now, let's get to some names you don't know. We could talk about one more name that's definitely up there. There's a couple names, actually. I'm going through the list. But there's some names I don't even know on here. But I'll talk about some of the names I do know. Justin Jackson, the forward of North Carolina.
Oh, yes.
6'8", 210. He is a mismatch for a lot of teams in the country. He's averaging a team-leading 18.5 points per game this season for North Carolina, and that includes totals of 34 points against number 6 Kentucky and 28 points against Monmouth and 26 points against Virginia Tech. He is a versatile scorer. Versatile. That makes him tough to guard. I don't care who you are in this nation, even one of the best defenders. He is a tough matchup for a defender. He's big enough to get the ball on the wing, turn his back down in the paint, but he also can get off those curl screens and hit a fadeaway three-pointer and make some acrobatic plays at the rim. You never know what you're going to see from Justin Jackson, and that's what makes him really extremely dangerous for North Carolina and for other teams facing North Carolina in March Madness. Let's talk about a Dookie. No, not Grayson Allen, folks. It's another Dookie, and that is guard Luke Kennard, who is actually at the Myrtle Beach What's that tournament called? I'm drawing a blank.
The one over Christmas?
Yeah.
You asked me too quick, too.
Yeah, I know.
Beach Ball Classic.
Beach Ball Classic. Oh, right on the tip of my tongue. For some reason, I kept saying ball at the beach, and I know that's like the moniker of Coastal Carolina. But Luke Kennard is a special town as well. He is actually leading the ACC in points per game with 19.8 points per game. Dangerous. Dangerous.
And he was on fire Saturday night.
Oh, yeah. From three-point land, just jumpers anywhere. He has the ability and athleticism to break you down defensively and make a move to the hoop. He's almost shooting 50% from the three-point line. I mean, he's an incredible athlete. He moves well with the ball, without the ball. And really, we've seen the change in offense for this Duke Blue Devils team. No longer are we seeing some big men down low that we've seen right. with Jahlil Okafor. And that was kind of a rarity with Duke because we know the story behind Duke. It is point guard play and three-point play. That's what this team got back to this year.
That's right.
That's exactly what this team. He is, and Luke Kennard is the spearhead of this. He is the type of shooter who barely ripples the net when he shoots. It's almost like the air has more effect on the net than Luke Kennard shooting the ball. But with that said, you know, he can get off his own shot on the dribble, and with players like Jason Tatum and Grayson Allen around him, you know, if defenses get caught up in trying to stop those two athletic players, Luke Kennard can easily take over a game by himself.
Right.
Easily. So I like him a lot. Also, another name that we're very well aware of is Dylan Brooks, the forward from Oregon. He is the definition of explosion. And for the Ducks, he can do it all. He really can do it all. He leads the team with 15 points per game. He has a beautiful outside shot with some NBA range and is really a threat to score anywhere on the court. He's very fun to watch. His athleticism, I'm not going to compare him to Russell Westbrook because no one has Russell Westbrook's athleticism and speed with the ball on a fast break. But I think the fearlessness of Russell Westbrook can be matched by Dylan Brooks.
Right.
He has no problem taking on any player on the court and throwing down a nasty dunk on your face. I mean, it's true. And there's some good defenses in the Big 12.
Oh, most definitely.
And he has done that. They're in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
There's not that many good defenses in the Pac-12. I take that back. But I remember a game earlier in the season where it was almost three consecutive possessions where he took the ball down the court and just dunked on somebody. He's just one of those guys that it doesn't matter where he is on the court. His players, his teammates find him, and he makes plays to get Oregon out on either the run and transition or just getting the ball in the bucket when they're in their half-court offense. He has 9 games of 20-plus points so far this season, including 23 points against then UCLA, number 2 UCLA, 28 points against then number 22 USC, and 27 USC Southern California. Sorry, people out there. And then 27 points against Arizona State. So Dylan Brooks is a special talent, but I don't really see a Pac-12 team outside of UCLA making a run. Maybe Arizona, too. That's another special team as well. But let's talk about a guy you probably have not heard of. Nigel William Goss. You ever heard of him?
No.
That's because he plays for Gonzaga, and nobody watches Gonzaga basketball. But he is as pure as an offensive player as you will find in college basketball this season. He's been a major reason why Gonzaga has been successful this season. You know, they were undefeated. They were the last team to be undefeated in NCAA basketball. And really, there's a great chance that they could make a run in March, and it will be on the back of Nigel William Goss. Now, they're not a one-man team. They're not. But he could do it. He's led the team in scoring, putting up 16 points per game. And they may not seem impressive in the grand scheme of this list, Gonzaga in general, and him, when we're talking about some of the great Power 5 players in NCAA basketball. But he's shooting over 50% from the field as well.
Wow.
Yeah. How many times have we talked about a guy shooting over 50%? Play some defense, people. But he is as smooth a shooter from the outside as he is driving through the lane and moving without the ball. He is a star for Gonzaga, and he'll be a star in the NCAA tournament for the Zags. You know, a lot of people are reading a lot into this Gonzaga team.
Right.
I'm not exactly sold. I still think Power 5 is the way to go when you're picking your NCAA bracket. But you can't look past a Butler, a Gonzaga.
That's right.
And some of these other mid-major conference teams. Gonzaga might be the top of that list. T.J. Leaf, and I'm a huge proponent of Lonzo Ball from UCLA, but T.J. Leaf is the guy that really is a special talent. He's 6'10", 225-pound freshman.
Wow.
That's a monster. He's one of the best big men heading into this NCAA tournament. He's averaging 16.6 points per game for the Bruins. He's had 9 20-plus point games, including 32 points against Washington State. And post play matters in the NCAA tournament. We want to talk about all the dazzling three-point percentages right. that have gone over, but post play matters. If you have a big man that cannot be stopped, you have a good chance to make a run. But Leaf is more than that as a big man. He can not only bang down low when he needs to, but he's really good at getting open in the paint and agile enough to really make some plays on the perimeter on the fast break. Now, what I've seen from UCLA is this team has athleticism up and down the court, whether it's your point guard at Lonzo Ball or T.J. Leaf, one of the forwards. This entire team is athletic,
right?
And they are a special team. That's why I've been so high on them. Yes, they've lost some games this year that they probably should have won, but I've been so high on UCLA because this is like it's like another reemergence of a Kentucky West Coast team. Just talented freshmen up and down this roster. And will we see T.J. Leaf and Lonzo Ball probably go to the NBA? More than likely, yes.
Oh, yeah.
So get it in, folks. You can watch them now.
They'd be crazy not to.
Oh, yeah. Lonzo Ball is already considered a top three pick, if not the number one overall pick. Especially in his dad's mind. He's a future Hall of Famer.
Well, that's a different discussion.
He's a nut job. Nut job. There's so many players that can really take the team off their back, but take their team on their back. But I really believe like Malik Monk of Kentucky, Chris Jenkins of Villanova, Frank Mason III of Kansas, T.J. Leaf, Dylan Brooks, those two guys, and Justin Jackson and Luke Kennard in the ACC. Those are the names you'll be watching in March as we head into the NCAA tournament because those are the guys that are some special talents. That's not saying that one of these mid majors can't make a run. Because it happens every year.
It does. Every single year.
That's why you got to watch some of these conference championship games of these smaller conferences. Because you will see something. I'm not going to say that I saw Steph Curry and Davidson making a run. But right. I got to see him live in person two times that season. Playing against Appalachian State when they're in the same conference. And he threw down like 45 points and 40 points on us.
Oh, wow.
And I knew. I was like, this kid's so special. I was like, and they had some special talent around him, too. I was like, but Davidson's going to do something in this tournament. Did I think they were going to make it as far as they did? No. But I thought they could pull an upset in the first two rounds, probably. You could also look at the Florida Gulf Coast team who pulled an upset. They are just one of those teams that nobody was talking about, but if you watch their conference tournament, you saw some special athleticism of those guys who are just, you know, nicknamed Dunk City now. They're back in the tournament again, by the way. But it's going to be very interesting, and we do have some Power 5 conference tournaments getting underway in the next couple of days, and so let's preview those coming back from this commercial break. We'll first start with the ACC tournament. Who's going to win it? Go on Twitter, at 100 through the team. Tell us who you believe will win the ACC men's basketball tournament. North Carolina, Florida State, Notre Dame, or you can vote for other. If you do vote for other, let us know on Twitter, at 100 through the team. We'll be back on the drive.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. 27 minutes past the hour. Pat Payone and Rusty hanging out with you, as we mentioned earlier in hour one. Wally B's off the next 3 days, today, tomorrow, and Thursday. So Rusty will be hanging out with me, making sure the show goes well, and keep me on track. As I have a tendency to just go off track. But the ACC Men's Basketball Tournament is set as the regular season concluded on Saturday with the fantastic UNC-Duke game in which the Tar Heels beat the Duke Blue Devils 90-83. And so now we have the ACC Tournament, which actually gets underway today. And with the three first-round matchups, number 13 NC State playing number 12 Duke. That is at noon. Clemson needs multiple wins in this ACC tournament to
They're
going to
need a lot of help.
Yeah, they're definitely going to. That is followed by number 15-seeded Boston College against the number 10-seed Wake Forest Demon Deacons. That's 2 p.m., supposedly, or whenever that first game ends. Wake Forest needs to get a win in this game to be in. Maybe another win after that, but I think they could solidify their way in with a win in this game. And then the last game in the first round is number 14 Pitt versus number 11 Georgia Tech. And that's at 7 p.m. And this Georgia Tech team is another team that not only needs to win this game, probably needs to win the next game after that to be able to get in.
Right.
And going through the seeds, if you didn't know, North Carolina, the big-time number one seed, easily. Florida State, number two. Notre Dame is number three, which is very surprising. I thought Louisville would be up there. Number four is Louisville. Number five, Duke. Number six, UVA. Number seven seed is Virginia Tech. Number eight, Syracuse. Number nine, Miami. And then we went through the 10 through 15 seeds that are in those first-round matchups. So how do I think this is going to break out? Or break down, I should say. And we're getting some responses from this. Michael Green says the guys with the blue Tar Heels should win it. Mark Schwartz says a big upset Duke will make it all the way to the final and win it.
No.
That'd be very interesting. Rusty with an emphatic no. Let's talk about the first round, because these games are happening today. I believe all the favorites should hold serve in this game because they have a lot more to play for. Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, Clemson all have shots to make the NCAA tournament as at-large teams. Now, granted, Wake Forest, out of these three teams, has the best chance compared to Georgia Tech and Clemson's slim chances, but it's not out of the realm of possibility for the latter two to sneak into this bracket. But what they would have to do, they'd probably have to get to the ACC semifinals or finals actually get in. As of Sunday, ESPN's Joe Lunardi had 10 ACC teams in, including Wake Forest, with Clemson and Georgia Tech listed as teams on the outside looking in. But meanwhile, you got Boston College, Pitt, NC State all having poor regular seasons. They simply just don't match up with these three opponents that they're facing in the first round. So I will take Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, and Clemson to move on, just because they have a lot more to play for. And you can't discredit that. When you have a lot more to play for, you end up playing usually better games.
And as much of a hard road as it would be for Clemson, I'd love to see them in there.
Yeah. I'll get to it right now when we're talking about the second round.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No, you're right. No, that was a good lead-in. And the dreams for Georgia Tech and Clemson, I believe, will die in the second round. They will just not be able to happen because who does the Clemson Tigers run into if they win today? The Duke Blue Devils.
Oh, they're done.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not happening. Now, who does Georgia Tech face? Virginia, who just happens to be the number one defense in all of the nation.
That's right.
And just beat North Carolina 53-43. What a snooze fest, by the way. 43 points from a North Carolina team. I mean, that's how Virginia plays, though.
Right.
I want to say it was a couple weeks ago, and I can't remember who they were playing, but they had something like 19 points at halftime.
Good grief.
It's uninteresting basketball to watch, but still, they're a good team. The same cannot be said for Wake Forest. This is a rubber-stamped matchup for them. After beating number 8 Louisville at home, they then take on this is during the regular season, by the way. They take on Virginia Tech in Blacksburg this past week. They will more than likely be taken on, and I got to go back to the bracket real quick. Wake Forest will be in Game 2, so they will be taken on Virginia Tech. I don't know why I said that wrong, but yes, they'll be taking on Virginia Tech. Woo! No, I think this is a good matchup for Wake Forest. They have some pretty good scores, including the number 3 scorer in the ACC, John Collins, who's the forward for Wake, who's averaging 19 points per game. I think that they will be able to handle the Virginia Tech Hokies, and that leads us to the final game, where it would be Syracuse taking on a pretty good team in their own right, Miami. You know, Miami is such an up-and-down team that it's hard for me to get a read on them. It's hard for me to get a read. But Syracuse has struggled in recent games, but they've also posted some pretty good wins over Duke and Georgia Tech. So I believe that the Orange will be able to pull a win out of you there, you know what, to beat Miami as they did earlier in the season when they won 70-55. So the winners in the second round: Virginia, Syracuse, Wake Forest, and Duke. That leads us to the quarterfinals. The Cavaliers are one of the best teams in the country. We're talking about UVA. Yet they finished sixth in the ACC. That is largely due to some bad luck that they had during the regular season. They lost three ACC games in overtime.
Right.
And two others by a combined 6 points. Now they can't. They're not very good offensively.
That's unreal, though.
Isn't that unreal? Three overtime losses and the other two losses that they had in the ACC were by a combined 6 points.
But unlucky.
They could be very dangerous in this in the ACC tournament. I mean, they struggled down the stretch, 2-6 recently before beating UNC and Pitt to close out the regular season. And UVA, you know, they're smart, they're experienced, and they're a tactically sound team that should do well in the NCAA tournament. And so when we're looking at the matchup between them and Notre Dame, that's a hard one for me to pick because they actually beat Notre Dame earlier in the season. So I'll take the win again for the UVA Cavaliers. I'll take the upset in that one. Now UNC should win easily over Syracuse. They're no match for the Tar Heels. The same could be said for Florida State over Wake Forest. And really, Louisville and Duke should be a pretty good contest. That's probably going to be the best game of the quarterfinals. That's another one I don't know where I give the slight edge to. I will take Louisville just because there's at some points in the season Duke has just not looked good shooting the 3-point and they live and die by the 3-ball.
They're very inconsistent.
They are. So again, quarterfinals: Virginia, UNC, Florida State, Louisville. Semifinals. Oof. This is some hard picks right here, folks. UNC would be taking on Louisville. UVA would be taking on Florida State. Oh man. UNC has the best rebounding differential in the entire nation, so you got to take them in a lot of different contests. And I will take them over Louisville, especially after UNC, won that game. I want to say it was just a couple weeks ago. They won 74-63, and they out rebounded Louisville 46-33 in that game. So I'll take North Carolina in that game. UVA will face Florida State on the other side of the bracket, and when these two teams last met each other, Bacon, the Florida State great player, had 29 points. He almost scored half the team's points in that 60-58 victory. And I think that it'll be another slugfest with Florida State's size being the biggest advantage that they have over UVA. So I'll take Florida State. Shocker, I have the number one and two seeds in the ACC championship, which more than likely means it's not going to happen. So UNC versus Florida State. UNC just has too much. They have four upperclassmen in the rotation who remember how close they were to getting to cutting the nets down in March last year. So I expect them to use that as fuel throughout the ACC tournament and also throughout the NCAA tournament. So I'll take North Carolina as well. Right now, the poll says 57% say North Carolina will win the ACC tournament. 17% say Notre Dame. Wow. Notre Dame's a good team.
And they've got a ton of fans. A ton.
Oh, yeah. And 13% say Florida State, 13% say other, and we got some votes for Duke in that equation. It's going to be a very interesting ACC tournament, and as I mentioned, it all starts today with Clemson tipping off with NC State at noon. That'll be on ESPN2. Then you have the next game being number 10 Wake Forest, number 15 Boston College, also on ESPN2, and then the last game of the day will be Pitt, the number 14 seed versus number 11 seed Georgia Tech, 7 p.m. on ESPNU. As I mentioned earlier, Clemson needs multiple wins to get in.
Yes.
Georgia Tech needs multiple wins to get in. Wake Forest, they can win this game and be in. And I think if they were to win this game and win another game, they're surely in. So a lot riding on today's ACC games. And you can't look past, again, those powerhouses in the ACC, the UNCs, the Dukes, the Florida States, the UVAs, the Louisvilles, the Notre Dames. One of those six teams is going to win this.
Right.
It's not easy. It's not hard for me to say that. I just don't see the other talents of the ACC winning this this tournament. All right, when we come back, we just previewed the ACC tournament. We will preview the SEC tournament. That is all coming up on The Drive.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Welcome back to The Drive, 40 minutes past the hour. Pat Payone and Rusty hanging out with you, and we just previewed the ACC tournament and gave our predictions. Let's do it for the SEC, which doesn't start today, but starts tomorrow. Now, this league and this postseason bracket are typically dominated by one team, the Kentucky Wildcats.
That's right.
But I think this 2017 SEC tournament has the potential to see another team ascend to a title. Will it happen? That's the big question mark. But Kentucky owns 29 SEC tournament championships, which is by far the most in the league. Closest is Alabama, who has six. Wow. The Wildcats are the two-time defending winners, but teams like Florida and South Carolina are really legitimate contenders. I think you can throw Vanderbilt in there as well, and even Arkansas. Really, it's a five-team league, if you're asking me, especially with Kentucky looking vulnerable at some times this season. On paper, Kentucky and John Calipari, their squad is clearly the heavy favorite. They have that dynamic freshman class that they get each and every year. Bam Adebayo, De'Aaron Fox, Malik Monk. I mean, they have such offensive firepower, probably as much as any team in the entire nation. So it's no surprise that they're fifth in the nation in scoring with 87.3 points per game. But they've shown that they are no lock to win this conference title. If they sputter offensively, they become extremely vulnerable. They don't play very good defense, first of all. So they become extremely vulnerable. This could be a problem when you're going up against great defensive teams like South Carolina, where head coach Frank Martin has really installed a great defensive attitude in the Gamecocks as they top the SEC by allowing just 39.4% field goal percentage. Now, in their only meeting of the season, South Carolina did fall to Kentucky 85-69 in Lexington. This game won't be in Lexington. And right. The Gamecocks were without P.J. Dozier. Dozier, who's averaging 13.6 points per game and leads the team with 2.9 assists per night. I mean, along with Sindarius Thornwell, who has a very good possibility of being the SEC Player of the Year, that makes South Carolina a pretty tough test for the Wildcats.
Most definitely.
I mean, in that game, Thornwell himself went off for 34 points, and he didn't have P.J. Dozier to play with him. And, you know, I looked up the stats to Sindarius Thornwell in the ACC. He is first in steals, second in scoring, sixth in rebounding.
And that's amazing considering he missed, what, six games this season?
Yeah, it's amazing. But Florida is another great team and another great threat to unseat Kentucky. The Gators are a game behind the Wildcats in the SEC standings in terms of the season at the end, and they have plenty of depth and experience. Three seniors, seven players averaging over 20 minutes per game, so they have a lot of players that come in there. They have some dynamic scorers as well, and they're not a stout offensive team. They are a great defensive team. But Florida will not beat itself. That is one of the key things you have to know about Florida is they will not give away games. There is a greater chance that they will get beat than they will of losing a game. They also rank high in most defensive categories while coming in 58th nationally, points per game given up at 79.1. Arkansas, they're quietly a team that you can also put as a potential sleeper with a 22-8 record. They are the three seed in this SEC tournament. But the SEC is not much for depth. There are really four teams that are highlighted with only 20 wins and a legitimate chance of making the NCAA tournament, according to CBS Sports' Jerry Palm's latest projections. Unless Alabama, Ole Miss, or a sneaky talented squad like Auburn can really muster up some upsets and get into the semifinals, we're not going to be seeing more than five teams, and I'm throwing Vanderbilt in this as well because I like this Vanderbilt team a lot. I think they have a chance to make a run. So let's go over my predictions. Why not? Starting off on Wednesday, 6 p.m. on the SEC Network, you have number 12-seeded Ole Miss, who was 15-15, and number 13-seeded LSU, who was 10-20. Miserable. I'm going to take Mississippi State. LSU is just so bad, and it's sad to say that because they've had great talent come in there, including Ben Simmons, who really didn't even take that team very far last year. So I'm going to take Mississippi State. The other game is 8:25 on the SEC Network between Auburn and Missouri. I think Auburn has a chance to make a run in this SEC tournament.
Yes.
They're a very talented team that has been up and down all season long, and some injuries have hampered them. So I'll take the Auburn Tigers in that one. That leads us to the second round on Thursday. Starting off noon on the SEC Network, number 9 Tennessee taking on number 8 Georgia. That's a toss-up game to me. Georgia plays good defense here and there. And they play good offense here and there, and often those don't equate on the same night.
Right.
Tennessee is the same way. They have the length to be a dangerous team. But I'm going to take Georgia just because I don't like Tennessee. It's just that's the only reason. I really, there's no reason, rhyme or reason to take Tennessee or Georgia, but I'll just take it because I don't like Tennessee.
There's a good reason.
Yeah, there we go. 25 minutes after that game, Mississippi State will tip off with Alabama. Alabama is another team like a South Carolina or a Florida that has a very good defensive team that does not have great scores. So I will take Alabama in this matchup against Mississippi State just because of the defense. The next game would be 6 p.m. on the SEC Network, Texas A&M versus Vanderbilt. I said Vanderbilt, sneaky team. They have the 7th seed.
Yes.
I'll take Vanderbilt big in this game. I Vanderbilt, I'm so high on them in making the NCAA tournament, and I think they'll have a fighter's chance to get in. The next game would be Auburn, the 11th seed versus number 6 Ole Miss. Again, I said Auburn is a team that you do not want to sleep on. I will think they will pull the upset on Ole Miss, who is another team that just lives and dies by the 3. And so I'll take Auburn in that game as well. Moving on to the quarterfinals, which will be Friday. Georgia, the number 8 seed, takes on number 1 Kentucky. That's where the dream stops for Georgia. Kentucky's going to run all over them. Kentucky, big win on this one. Can't really say much more about that one.
That's going to be a blowout.
Then you have a pretty interesting matchup between number 5 Alabama and number 4 South Carolina. Now, if South Carolina's running on all cylinders, offensively, defensively, Alabama doesn't stand a chance.
Right.
But what I'm seeing here is that both defenses play very good basketball. The big key is that South Carolina has Sindarius Thornwell.
Right.
So South Carolina's going to get the win. I think it's a very close game, but it's a win for South Carolina. I think they move on. Then you have number 7 Vandy versus number 2 Florida. Upset special. I know Florida's a sneaky good team to make it far in the NCAA tournament. I think Vanderbilt is a very special team. I'll say it again. This is a big upset for me. I'll take Vanderbilt going on, moving on to the semifinals, beating the number 2 Florida Gators. Auburn, the number 11 seed, after pulling the upset on Ole Miss, that ends for them taking on the number 3 Arkansas Razorbacks. Arkansas is a very good team that will make it in the NCAA tournament. So Auburn probably just misses out just by a hair being on the bubble of the NCAA tournament. That leads me to the semifinals, which will be Saturday. And having that rematch between Kentucky and South Carolina.
That'd be an amazing game.
I'm sorry, South Carolina. I really cannot pull the trigger and say that you guys can beat Kentucky.
It's not going to happen.
It's hard. There's so much talent on this Kentucky team. And, yes, South Carolina is a very talented team offensively and defensively. And they would need to play the best game of the year
to beat Kentucky. Most definitely.
For that reason, I'm going to take Kentucky to move on to the semifinals.
I'd agree with you.
The other semifinal would be Vanderbilt-Arkansas. Do I want to have the Cinderella story of Vanderbilt going to the semifinal? You're damn right I want to see it happen. I want to see Vanderbilt, number 7 seed, beat number 3 Arkansas in this semifinal and set up the big rematch of Kentucky-Vanderbilt, where Vanderbilt beat Kentucky early on in the season in the SEC regular season, and then Kentucky got the revenge game and got the win. So I want to see that UK-Vandy game.
Yes.
And UK will just wipe the floor with them more than likely. That's what's going to happen. UK being the big SEC championship winner again for a third straight year. Now, looking at the actual points per game for some of these players, there's a reason why Georgia is a sneaky team as well. And why I kind of glossed over this when I picked them against Tennessee. They have two of the top five scorers in all of the SEC. And crazy enough, they actually average the same amount of points, 18.7. And that is their guard, J.J. Frazier, and their forward, Yante Matten. Now, who's number one and two? Malik Monk, the guard for Kentucky, and Sindarius Thornwell, the guard for South Carolina, both averaging 21.2 points per game. So there you have it, folks. Going to the poll on Twitter. I think everyone's pretty much in agreement with me. 72% say Kentucky will win the SEC championship, the conference tournament. 17% say other. I got to believe that's some of the South Carolina fans voting in on that one, which I don't put it out of the realm of possibility. If South Carolina plays some of their best basketball, they can not only make a run in the SEC tournament, they can make a run in March as well.
They need consistency.
They do.
They need consistency.
They do.
Bad.
They do. 11% say Florida, not a single vote for Arkansas. Sorry, Razorbacks. Not going to happen for you, I guess, if everything goes according to the plan on Twitter. When we come back, final word and what to watch. That's all coming up on The Drive.
It's time for The Final Word. The show is almost over, but the conversation continues throughout the day on Twitter at 1003TheTeam. Enjoy your workday. We're wrapping up ours.
Yes, we are. 3 minutes left in today's show. Pat Payone and Rusty hanging out with you on The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3 The Team. Let's go through the teams that have already earned their automatic bids into the NCAA tournament, men's tournament with their school and conference. Florida Gulf Coast from the Atlantic Sun with a 26-7 record won their conference tournament. They will most likely be a 15 seed. Winthrop from the Big South, formerly from Coastal Carolina's rival, one of their rivals, 26-6 on the season. They will likely be a 14 seed. UNC Wilmington of the Colonial Athletic Association, they're 29-5. They will likely be a 15 seed. Iona of the Metro Atlantic Conference, they are 22-12 on the season, likely be a 15 seed. Wichita State of the Missouri Valley, 30-4. They will likely be an 8 seed. Jacksonville State of the Ohio Valley, there we go, got it out of my mouth. Ohio Valley Conference, 20-14 on the season, likely be a 16 seed. In East Tennessee State of the Southern Conference, 27-7, 13 seed. Today's matchups for the conference championships to punch their tickets. Horizon League, Milwaukee is 11-23. They'll be taking on Northern Kentucky, 23-10. And if I find that on the sheet, Horizon League will be at 7 p.m. on ESPN. The Northeast Conference, St. Francis is 16-15, playing Mount St. Mary's, 18-15. And that game, the Northeast Conference, will be at 7 p.m. on ESPN2. The Summit Conference, South Dakota State 17-16 versus Omaha 18-13. That is actually not on TV, I don't believe. That's weird. Anyway, the West Coast Conference is probably the best game of the night. That is number 19 St. Mary's 28-3 taking on number 4 Gonzaga 31-1. Best game of the night, 9 p.m. ESPN. Also, don't forget the ACC tournament gets underway. NC State versus Clemson, 12 p.m. on ESPN2. The Boston College versus Wake Forest, 2 p.m. ESPN2. And then you also have Pittsburgh versus Georgia Tech, 7 p.m. ESPNU. For Rusty, UEFA Champions League soccer, Arsenal versus Bayern Munich, 2:30, Fox Sports 1. Who wins?
Bayern Munich,
okay.
No doubt.
Yeah, I think so too. It's been a great show. Really appreciate everybody participating on Twitter. For Rusty, I'm Pat Payone. Everybody have a great Tuesday.
The home of Coastal Carolina and the Carolina Panthers. This is WSEA, Atlantic Beach, Myrtle Beach. Cumulus Broadcasting, Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.